When the day's been long and it's time to unwind, it's time for the boys to poke around in your mind. If you're like me and you like to laugh once in a while, sit up for David, strap yourself in for Kyle. Sit up for David, strap yourself in for Kyle.
And we're back.
Hello, viewers.
Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the Unacceptable Face of Podcasts. I'm Kyle.
And I'm David.
And here we are. We're finally in full flow. I'm not ashamed to say that in the recording of this episode, we've had 2 false starts already. Not once did we have to do this, either in last week's episode or in the pre-iTunes era. And now, and I must say, I'm not at fault. It takes 2 to tango, but in this case it only took 1. And that one was you, David.
Well, I've been trying to settle on what sort of personality disorder you're starting to exhibit. And I was going to settle on some sort of general...
I nearly think there should be a trigger warning there.
Very good point.
Finger on the trigger. Official Unacceptable Face of Podcasts trigger warning. Finger on the trigger.
See... I was going to go for you being just a sort of a general sort of neurotic over your fear, panic, and desperation for this to all flow smoothly. Mm. But I think it's deeper than that. I think you're a narcissist.
You think?
Yeah.
And what has made you pick up on that? What has led you to this conclusion?
To paraphrase you, I'm not at fault.
Well... I mean, there's a difference between being a narcissist and being a person who just has a healthy respect for the truth.
Hmm.
And I like
You'll
to think
make
I'm a
fine
bit both.
Journalist one day. What's that creed? Like the highest law in journalism is to tell the truth and shame the devil. I'm clearly your devil.
It's news to me. I've never heard that.
Maybe I'm just making it up.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was another thing you just made up. Aww. But anyway, on with the show. And what an awful week it's been.
I've had a very good week, actually.
How bloody insensitive. I was talking to the loss of 2 national treasures, David.
Oh, shit. God. Oh, no.
David
I feel
Boy and
Alan
Rickman. Oh, but no, that's fine. You've had a good week. That's fine.
I've dug my grave. Shit.
No. And now you're making light of death. Very good. Very good. I was going to, you know, maybe give a touching tribute to the 2 gentlemen. But no. More importantly than that, please tell us about your week, David.
Well, not a lot happened on Monday and Tuesday, but Wednesday.
Except the death of David Bowie, of course, on Monday, but that's fine. Keep going.
Sorry?
Nothing.
I was kind of thinking about whether or not this would be worth bringing up. And I was sort of confronted by my fact that I don't really know that much about David Bowie.
Well, I was going to ask you that, actually. Were you a Bowie fan at all? And, you know, I say were you, I mean are you a Bowie fan? Because, of course, the music does live on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, famously, you have been reluctant to share... your musical tastes with the podcast at all, or perhaps more offensively, you've been reluctant to share it with old Kyle. And,
yeah,
and well, we share everything. We share everything. So I was quite hurt.
I mean,
whenever you rejected my advances.
Yeah, I was aware of the pain I caused you when I said that, but
and yet you didn't care.
As I've tried to sort of make clear, it's nothing personal. These are aspects of my personality that I wouldn't even be able to admit to myself. You know, it would take a psychoanalyst to draw this kind of information out of me. First of all, I don't really know that much about music at all. I have such a sparing sort of connection to it that it's, you know, I'll hear something that I like, and that's sort of it. I don't really follow it in any sort of like fan way. And I've never really been exposed to much David Bowie, which sounds... Is it Bowie or Bowie? I don't even know that.
I don't know. There was
such a fool.
No, no, no. There was some. I mean, because I've always called him Boy. But yeah. I did see trending on YouTube or Twitter or something earlier this. This week there was a video of him responding to a question on that some time ago, but I neglected to watch it. So I really don't know, but I think most people that I've heard anyway refer to him as Boy.
Right. Okay.
So,
well,
do with that what you will.
If it's any indication about how little I know about him and his work, before we started recording, I actually brought up an internet tab in which I tried to Google the name of the song "Life on Mars" to check that I got it right, and I had got it wrong. I thought it was "Water on Mars." Apparently, it's "Life on Mars." That's
a Doctor Who episode.
Well, exactly, yeah.
"War on Mars." Yeah.
Featuring Bowie Bass One as the bass. There they go.
Oh, that's right.
Well, I don't know, Carl, because I'm pretty sure you've not seen that episode.
Yeah, but I have heard that. I have heard that.
Oh, okay.
Why are you trying to sandbag me on the podcast?
I'm trying to sandbag you on the podcast.
Yeah, why?
If you look at the first 5 minutes of the episode, it's nothing but...
You've earned that,
you
though.
Hanging... You've earned that. Yes, all
right. I'm innocent in this.
Well...
I am blameless.
I'm very much of the opinion that we'll let history decide.
Okay. And any other thoughts on Alan Rickman at all?
Well, I've been trying to decide what my favourite role of his is. And I don't know whether it's... And I think it's Snape. I think it's Snape. What would you say?
Well, I think, like, the vast majority of our generation, I would agree that it's Snape.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think that the big two that mainstream audiences will take from would be either Snape or Hans Gruber, the villain from Die Hard, which is a film I don't think I've ever watched in its entirety, which I'll probably get slaughtered for admitting to. But
well, let me extend an olive branch. I've not seen it either.
There we go. To think, if we were still together in Edinburgh, that could have been our plans for tonight, and yet here we are.
I'm watching on Monday, actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you with your new friends.
Well, they're sort of concurrent, but yeah.
Don't you dare,
Kyle,
say that we ran in parallel.
I didn't walk out on our city. Okay, I'm still here.
That's a low blow. Now, to get back to the topic at hand, I'm going to speak quite obliquely about the current events. And I'll say that I'm beginning to suffer from what I believe could be called bereavement fatigue. In that I'm finding it increasingly irritating, for want of a better word, the amount of sort of heartfelt posts we see about celebrities on Facebook and Twitter. The most egregious one at this time, I think, has been misappropriated quote to Alan Rickman, when, you know, apparently he said that when he's 80 he'll read Harry Potter, and like his grandkids will come in and say, "Still, grandfather," said, "always," which yes is a parallel to something his character said in the books, which actually I didn't remember at all, which just shows the strength of my knowledge about Harry Potter. But he never said that, but wasn't attributed to him, and it's just so sort of cringe-inducingly sentimental.
Yeah.
That kind of thing really gets under my skin.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. Like, I don't really like interacting with Facebook publicly at the best of times, but I find it really... Cause it's so easy to make it about yourself, and that's sort of what I see most people doing. Because I mean, what does one really hope to accomplish by this? Because I mean, all you're telling people really is that you were a fan of their work and that you're sorry that they're dead. But no one really needs to know that. Like maybe a couple of your friends that you might bring it up in conversation. It doesn't seem something that your 200 or so people that you've met in your life really need to know. I don't really get it.
I'm quite active at Facebook and Twitter at the best of times, and I don't really share things like that at all. I don't really see the point in it. But I must admit, on Twitter, whenever Alan Rickman's passing was announced, I did tweet something along the lines of, "Wow, this has been a really shit week," or something like that. So I don't know, but yeah, it annoys me when people, you know, will post that really sanctimonious claptrap.
I think maybe the sort of a happy medium is probably posting, like, say, a link of your favorite Bowie song, or an Alan Rickman clip or something. That's without any of the sort of the cloying status attached to it. I think that's probably tribute enough, right?
Let's just post that. Yeah. I think that's quite quite touching in its own way without going OTT.
Yeah.
However, speaking of over the top, I think it's time we addressed this week's Film in Focus.
Right. I've been looking forward to this.
That was good. See, I think that was a professional level segue into this topic. And it wasn't planned. I didn't have the topic, you know, OTT at hand, but I just thought when that came up, this will do nicely.
Viewers won't be able to see this, but I'm wagging my finger in satisfaction at that.
That was very, very good. Wonderful to see. So what I was going to propose, because I think not to get too meta with our discussion points here, I've been warned about talking about the podcast too much. But last week's episode, I did feel we had problems with pacing there. In that we talked for half an hour about us and then half an hour about Star Wars. So I was going to propose that we add a kind of ticking time bomb element to our film discussions.
Okay.
Insofar as we can either try to keep it to 10 minutes or we can try to keep it to 15.
I think
what
10.
What are your thoughts on 10?
I think 10. We'll give it a bit of bite.
Okay, and now I must insist that we each get time to talk within the 10
minutes. That's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine.
David, not to point any fingers or anything, but it can be a bit of a struggle at times on this show. But
that's gracious of you to admit.
Right,
I'm kidding.
So I'll start the timer in a tick. This will be us talking about Quentin Tarantino's 8th film, The Hateful Eight. And the timer has started. What were your thoughts, Dave?
I liked it a lot, but I felt that Tarantino's style ultimately sort of clashed and sort of felt a bit inconsistent with the actual premise and setting and construction of that particular film. That was my sort of takeaway. Yeah, I kind of feel that the claustrophobic setting of the film and it being like very, very much a character study and like this sort of compressed one or two location kind of dialogue building up over the course of the film, that needs to be driven by a lot of tension, and Tarantino's sort of tension is very, very superficial, whereas the tension that you get from I kind of expect I'm used to in those kind of settings tends to be much more sort of at a much sort of deeper kind of bone level, and I kind of felt that the two sort of things clashed in a way that I didn't really like too much.
I have to ask off that. Have you seen Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, I feel it worked there. I didn't feel it worked here.
Okay, because I think to sort of gloss over that would be doing our discussion at this service when you're talking about that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I also enjoyed it. I thought it was a good film. I believe in my one-page review, I give it 3.5 stars for pure enjoyment. It was good. I mean, I do think he's suffering from his own reputation, to be honest. The film was about an hour too long. I mean, you could, there was so much that film you could have cut out, I think.
I didn't mind that. No? Because I thought I would mind that. But I sort of thought, like, because a lot of people have said it was basically a play on screen, and a lot of plays do sort of stretch quite a bit longer than films, and so I didn't mind that too much. I never felt bored throughout it. I will confess though that I did fall asleep for a little bit, but that was.
How can you say you're never bored in it if you fell asleep? I think if you fall asleep in any film, I think that's a pretty tragic example of its quality.
Normally, yes. Normally, when I fall asleep in films, I would agree with you. But in this particular case, I was fighting it. I was so invested in what was going on, but my mind was racing with it. But my body was shutting down around me, and I couldn't keep my eyelids open. It was really bad. But then it swung round to a particular high point of the film where there was a sort of the climax halfway through before the intermission, and that really jolted me up though. That was. Yeah.
Now, just when you talked there and said it was comparable to a play, you know, I was talking with a couple of friends about this yesterday, and you know, I think all of us there who saw the film together and were talking about this yesterday, we did feel it was too long.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's important to remember is that Quentin Tarantino himself intends for there to be an interval in the film. And I believe he has advised projectionists in general as a whole that there should be an interval. Specifically at the point,
Did you see it with an interval? Did you get
No, I didn't.
Oh, I did.
Oh, yeah. Did you? No, yeah, from what I've heard, and I'll try to avoid giving away any spoilers here, the interval is supposed to come just before the beginning of a chapter that starts with a flashback. There's a chapter that starts and you see the events that have just come
before
that from a different point of view, and I've heard that the intermission is supposed to come between, or is supposed to come just prior to that point. Was that where the interval came in your screening?
Right. The final shot before the intermission was the closing of the piano case.
Right.
And then it goes, boom, and then intermission.
Well, we were talking about this yesterday, and we said that we do think that having that interval in there, and specifically at that point, would take away a lot of the concerns about the film being over long. Which I agreed with at the time, and it's interesting to you here say that you didn't think it was too long at all.
I was very grateful for the intermission. It really divided the film up properly. It gave us a lot of time to kind of absorb it. And actually, I think Tarantino himself commented that
a bit of time to breathe.
Yeah, because before the intermission, there's such a sort of a high tension point, and then after the intermission, the stakes are still really high, and he sort of said that it might feel very, very intense carrying on like that, and so I think not having that time to sort of relax, withdraw, retreat, gather yourself, I probably would have had that same concern. I was very grateful for the intermission. I felt it really made it.
Yeah. Okay. Because I do think it would have been quite good to have seen the film with that intermission in place.
Yeah.
So, now, not to harp on about a topic that is often an unwelcome spectre hovering over the release of a QT film.
Oh.
I'm not going to be too specific about any things like dropping the N-bomb as an example, but it's really just how he portrays some more extreme acts, you know, be that acts of violence, you know, there is a lot of gore in his films traditionally, and this film is certainly no exception to that. But also in the use of language as well. How do you feel about that? Like, do you think that's okay? Would you change anything? Do you think the film would gain or lose anything by taking some of that more extreme, you know, hard R, hard 18 stuff out of the film?
Well, I should check my privilege first and say that at least to do with the race stuff, you know, I'm a privileged middle class white boy. There's only so much I can really say without.
Aren't we all? I can probably safely say that the majority of people hearing this podcast are, you know. So,
it didn't bother me at all, to be honest. I think there's an essence of, like, at this point you should know what you're getting in for with a Quentin Tarantino film, and I feel if he was to tone it down, it would detract from it. Because I kind of feel if you're depicting events and trying to be as sort of gritty and realistic about it as possible, there should be a lot of blood, and certainly in that time setting, there should be a lot of racist sentiment as well.
I have to say,
I can feel like washing over that really helps in any way.
In regards to the blood, I don't think that was realistic. To be honest, I think that was firmly over the top and borderline gratuitous. Because, I mean, there are a lot of times when it's not just blood, you know, there are chunks. I mean, there's
bits of bone, right?
One scene as well where, you know, a character gets covered and stuff, and there are chunks and pieces that are kind of just there for the rest of the film. And I don't know, I think that's...
Do you not think that over-the-topness is sort of the point, though? Like, that's sort of part of his signature? If I was going to be snooty about it, you can probably analyze that and say that it makes some sort of comment on the sort of pointless, gratuitous nature of violence in the real world. It just feels like part of Tarantino's style at this point. I didn't feel gratuitous in the same way that it would have done if I was seeing Zack Snyder do that, for example.
Mm.
It all felt part of the same artistic flow. Like, it flows with the dialogue. That heightened reality, I think, is part of the reason why I like Tarantino stuff.
That's fair. Right, we have just under a minute to go. Any closing thoughts at all in the film? Anything important you want to get out there?
If anyone's interested in hearing more about our views, I would like to direct us both to pieces that we have written on it. Kyle, you wrote a very salient one-page review.
Hashtag one page review. That's right. Yes.
Hashtag indeed. And
that is accessible on the Twitter feed.
And I scrolled a few thoughts of my own, which expand a bit on what I've said here, in slightly longer form on the Two Fops blog page,
which is also accessible through the
Twitter feed. Yeah.
And so, I will put in the description as well.
And.
Right, so that's just about the 10 minutes up there. And, you know, I do appreciate that you went into that, David, and you gave us a plug, but I don't think we needed to waste any of our time on that. That could have happily come after the 10 minutes.
Well, in that case...
We lost a minute. The timer has stopped. I think that's it.
I was rather hoping that you would graciously plug it yourself when you started off the timer, but you didn't, so that's fine.
Why would you do that at the start?
No, I think you would.
You will never make it in broadcasting.
Have you read my review out of interest? No, you haven't. Damn you all.
No. I got about halfway through and I fell asleep.
Oh, Kyle.
No, I didn't. Kyle, I have read
breaking
it all
my heart.
And To be brutally honest, I was hurt at how much more proficient at writing a review of a film you are than I am. It was a real eye opener, and it scared me.
Well, but you don't know how long it took me to write that. How many days I was sweating over it.
How long did it take you?
I wrote it in. Well, I did write it in one go, but it took a while.
Really?
Yeah, it did take a little while. Partly because I was trying to work out what I actually thought of the film. Like I was trying to hone in on why it felt a bit hollow to me. But yeah. But I mean, I wouldn't compare it to your review, because your review was intentionally supposed to be post viewing impressions, sort of jotted down quickly and freshly, right?
It was. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Now, to move on, I do believe there's a topic you've wanted to talk about for a while now on the podcast, talking about a particular caped hero that I'm sure our audience will be familiar with. So, enlighten us on the topic you want to get off your chest.
Okay, so I don't know what our listeners will think of this, but when it comes to the most mythic character in the sort of the superhero genre, by which I mean, of course, Clark Kent, the Superman.
Or Kal-El, as he's known at home in Krypton.
Or Kal-El, yes. A lot of people really, really hate that character. A lot of people turn their nose up at him and spit on him and say that he's outdated, he's irrelevant, he's overpowered, he's boring, he's too nice, and that they don't like seeing him on screen or on the page of a comic book. And I bring this up because I was recently having a conversation in which the Batman vs. Superman film came up, and I expressed my excitement over it coming to the big screen, even though I have quite a few reservations over it will be any good. I love the thought of seeing Batman and Superman on the same screen at the same time. I think that'll be fantastic. And very, very quickly, I was shot down by a number of people who made the same sort of criticisms about Superman that I've just detailed. And it got under my skin. It really did.
Why do you even associate with these people? That's the question I have straight off the bat.
Loneliness, Kyle. Desperation. Yeah, no, it got, because I mean, Superman is still not one of my favorite superheroes. But nevertheless, I do feel an attachment to that character, and I feel he's being maligned way too much these days. Would you share that view, Kyle, or are you a basher?
Well, there's that's besides the point, David, over whether or not I would be a basher. But
I've seen you bash out a few.
There's one person in particular that shares those kind of anti-Superman opinions, and he may well be listening to this episode. And in fact, my cousin as well. I think there was a comment before we had a discussion some years ago now, as to how Batman could ever properly have a fight against Superman, which was there. I kind of get annoyed anytime there is like a fictional hero or character like that who it becomes popular or fashionable to shit on, for want of a better term. The other one that jumps to mind for me at least is Frodo Baggins. Another character that people just jump on and say, oh, he's weak, he's pathetic, he doesn't do anything in the movie at all, when they're clearly just not taking into account how big a burden it is to have the One Ring hanging around your neck for that amount of time. But as for the Clark Kent criticisms, it just seems to me like people sort of wanting to be a like hipster kind of in regards to hero appreciation.
Wait, sorry, what, that in not liking Superman, that's a hipster perspective?
Oh. Yes.
Right. You know, I sort of wonder if we're coming around the other side now. I sort of think it's become so mainstream to shit on Superman that the people who defend him are sort of closer to hipsters now.
Is that why us two are taking this opinion?
Well, we're...
Or were we doing it before it was cool?
We were being hipster about Superman way before the hipsters were. Way before.
I mean, I quite like the character as a whole. You know, I don't have a lot of, you know, I will hold my hands up and say I've never read a Superman comic in my life. But I've, you know, usually, you know, I don't have anything against the character. There are people who say he's overpowered and things like that. And for me, that's not really something I care too much about.
Yeah, I mean, so I think the main sort of criticisms of Superman are the two of them are the one that he's overpowered, and that two, he has no edge or bite to him as a character.
Mm.
And I think so with the overpowered one, I sort of think, well, at one level, that's obviously not true, because he has a number of enemies and adversaries and situations which do match his power level. And but sort of more importantly, I kind of think that most Superman stories, the point isn't really whether or not he's, you know, he's strong enough to punch his way through it. It's more about whether he can save the day and save everyone as well, and whether or not he's strong enough to bear the responsibility of all of the other lives that depend on him. I kind of think that tends to be his challenge more. Like, you know you're not going to kill Superman, and he tends to know it as well. It's whether or not he can triumph without losing anyone else, without all of the other people in Metropolis dying or suffering. Because when you have that amount of power, when you're a god among men, you're responsible for everyone. And the challenge is then whether or not you can meet that really excessive... Like, for Spider-Man... He's a relatively weak superhero. It's fairly likely there are going to be a lot of casualties. Superman doesn't really have that excuse. I kind of feel if people die, that's really on Superman's shoulders, and he's held up by everyone as a symbol, as the symbol of hope and truth and justice and all that. So I kind of think that's where the interest of the character comes in, that he's got this enormous burden to bear despite his power level.
Mm.
Yeah, and also that as well as being a god among men, he is just a man. He's just a normal guy. He's not from Asgard, or he's not from Amazonia or anywhere like that.
He's from Krypton.
Yeah, but he didn't grow up there. He's culturally he's from Kansas. He's a guy who grew up on a farm, and an interesting thing someone pointed out was that what makes Superman cool and what makes him different to all the other superheroes is that he's one of the only ones, with Captain America being the other exception, that sort of does what he does purely as a matter of ethics and because it is the right thing to do or it's a nice thing to do, rather than being driven by some sort of oppressive trauma or guilt, which everyone else seems to be. He's the only one who sort of stands up and says, well, I have all these powers, I was raised to be good, this is the good thing to do. And it kind of makes it more interesting because there's no reason for him to do it other than that, and it makes it feel vulnerable. It makes it feel like there wouldn't be that much to stop someone from taking that path, unless they were being driven on by guilt or obsession, just doing it because it's a nice thing to do. That I don't know. I think that actually adds edge to it.
Yeah.
Did I make sense there, or was I just sort of whittering on?
No, it does, and that is a view that I've never really taken on the character at all. Are there a lot of instances where that is challenged or called into question that you're aware of?
I think the most obvious one recently would have been Injustice, right, where he's confronted with a tragedy, and then he doesn't just stop being a hero; he becomes the worst villain the world's ever seen. There's quite a few where there's quite a few stories where he's overwhelmed by his task and can't quite meet it, and has to sort of back down and tries to live a normal life, tries to have a family, flies away from Earth, that kind of stuff. It always feels like he's been given this enormous task, and despite all the best superpowers in the world, it's a really difficult one to meet. He's a messiah, but he's a normal guy. That's kind of how I think the character's interesting, and I don't think any other superhero really deals with that.
That just sounds like Jesus, to be honest, because that was the whole thing with him. He was a messiah, yet a normal guy.
Yeah, but we never really get to see the normal guy aspects of Jesus, do we?
Like in the Bible, which is a real fatal flaw of the Bible and kind of the Christian religion as a whole, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's why I firmly believe that A Christmas Carol is a better Christmas story than the birth of Christ.
You've expressed this opinion before. Have we talked about it? I think we've talked about it on the podcast as well. In the
old days, yes. In the YouTube era.
It's an opinion I very much respect.
Yeah. And I long to live in a world where, in a secular world, where it would be the story that is taught to children at Christmas time rather than the birth of Christ.
Hmm. Hmm.
It's a much more captivating story.
Yeah.
Hope that's not too controversial for all you folks out there in Radio Land.
If we then later hear that you were hunted down by a mob of peasants, strung up and tarred.
They are revolting.
Oh, very good. Mm. Very good.
Okay.
So, yes, that's my sort of very brief take on why Superman shouldn't be discounted.
For 2 weeks you've been harping on about getting that out there. I'm just glad it's done.
I mean, I'm tempted to like bang on at length about this in some sort of written form, because
wouldn't be the first time.
It's made me feel very fighty. It's made me feel very, very fighty.
Has it? And I'm not going to rise to it. I can see such arguments beneath me.
What does James think about it? Our one-time guest. Do you know if James is a big fan of Superior?
I'm not James. Shall we call him up? Shall we get him on? You just really want to get me out of this and have James there?
No. I just get
to work off James.
That was a nice thing. I was playing up the whole, you know, camaraderie that you two have.
You're just
not happy
with just
history.
Us
two. No, this is what I mean.
And
history
was never more valiant than when James was here.
I
didn't want to get into this. I didn't.
That was honestly not an attempt to get a rise about James. That was genuinely trying to bring in another perspective, or giving you a chance to reminisce fondly about an old friend.
That line is blurred. That line is blurred. And I didn't want to go into this, but
I don't feel I deserve what's going
to
come.
And out. I don't want to bang on for a long amount of time about, you know, the podcast and talk about sort of out of context things, but it's become increasingly apparent to me in recent weeks and in recent installments of the podcast that it was an opinion raised to me yesterday by a long-time friend of the show, Brian Wilson, that the roles that you and I have just kind of fallen into in this podcast is that I'm very much just a host. You know, I come on, I introduce the topics, and I ask questions, and then you get to give all the interesting opinions. You know, the thought provoking, interesting, engaging discussion points and opinions.
That's very much those we've
taken. And there is a comment which I think you may enjoy. It shook me to the core. It was a comment that he put on the end of that discussion we had yesterday, and I quote, "Kyle, the one thing that will make this podcast crash and burn is your ego." Now, there's a snicker there. There's a snicker coming. I can see him on the camera. He's pursed his lips, and the head is in the hands. And I would just want to know if you have any reaction to that. No, David. If I can continue my hosting role.
Kyle.
What do you think?
Right now, in this world, there's nothing I want more than to find a way for us to salvage this rotting ship that we're currently sinking on.
Well, David, there's a very simple way to do that.
Oh.
And that's for you to, that's for you to put in a bit of legwork.
I thought you were going to say walk the plank or something.
God, no. God, no. That would be a bit arch on the nose.
It would be a bit.
To be honest.
Well, I mean, like, if it helps, when it comes to this podcast, I'm generally racked with insecurity about this, about the same thing, but in reverse. It's always my impression that you are the one with the erudite and the eloquent speeches, and me sort of struggling to kind of keep up and throw a little wrench in there, and the occasional little interjection. And if there is rambling on, it's just that. It's just trying to find some ground to mark as my own in what I think is very clearly a show driven and gilded by you.
Gilded. I appreciate that, and I've taken
it's an honest sentiment as well. That's not me trying.
I'm sure it is. But I think an important comment to make on that is that that is very much internalized. That's your opinion, and I might share those opinions or have opinions of my own as well. But the comment we just got there was from a listener. Someone who's been at the podcast right from the start has heard every episode, even the ones that aren't released to the public. And he has said, and how do you think that made me feel?
I imagine it hurt. But I also wonder...
You imagined correctly.
But I also wonder if whether or not, with no disrespect to Mr. Wilson, that Mr. Wilson was named, right?
Mm. No. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, good. I can't help but wonder if he's plotting to destroy you, Kyle. He's not a totally objective listener. He has a personal connection to you. And if I wanted to destroy a friend, this would be how I would start.
It sounds like you have a lot of experience in destroying friendships. Have you?
I've got a number of enemies, Kyle.
Almost like you're doing a very good job of destroying our friendship.
There's been a lot of soured romances, a lot of soured bromances in my life.
Oh dear. I just hope and pray that the one we're currently engaged in remains as sweet as ever.
Kyle, if I have to sail around the Horn of Scotland, if that is a thing.
Where would the Horn of Scotland be? Or was that what you called me when I lived in Edinburgh? Was that what I was known as in Holyrood South? The Horn
the
of Scotland.
Scotland. Oh, that's genuinely got me laughing.
It's a badge I would wear with pride.
That's great. I think we should make up a badge for you. Yeah, with one of your particular grinning photos attached to it. Yeah. No. Like if I were to sail from Edinburgh around Scotland. I mean, I don't actually know what a horn is geographically, but the top of Scotland, the top of it.
The top.
Down into the choppy waters around Belfast. I don't know. You probably can't sail up to... Can you sail up to Carrickdore? Do you have access to the sea, a little harbour?
No.
Well,
it's a dry village. It's a dry village.
If I have to do that and then find your house by whatever means, by talking to the local populace, find your house, wait for it to start raining, and then stand there with a boombox, I will do it. I will do whatever it takes to salvage this.
And what song would you play, has to be asked.
Oh, I really hope you're not angry.
I'll put you on the spot.
I'm worried that there's something...
On the spot.
Oh, God, no.
I don't think so.
Is there something... Is there a particular song that if I don't get, you're going to be horrifically offended?
Speak from the heart, David.
Okay.
For once.
You know, this may not be the answer that you want to hear, but I think it would have to be Glenn's little ditty that he wrote for us.
Oh, God. Lovely.
Can you imagine that?
I think that
No,
that
no other
would
viewers. They wouldn't hear it. It would just be for us.
The thing is, I mean, because you would be at my house in person, you know, Glenn is a mere stone's throw away. You could only get him in person to come and play.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Live. And it would leave your hands available for
other things.
Other requirements.
that's sort of curdled the image a bit.
I have to put out here that I do have a girlfriend, so.
Well, now. But I'm coming. I'm coming after you. And
the plotting
continues.
Always
get what I want.
Oh, do you?
Oh, God, that sounded creepy. That sounded really
creepy.
Yeah,
that was a bit much. Right. Well, I think we've aired our grievances. Perhaps that could be a new regular feature of the show.
Grievances.
And the airing of grievances. And that I'll have to admit that was taken right out of an episode of Seinfeld.
Oh, I see.
The airing of grievances. But, you know, I do think it helps to clear... to clear the air like that occasionally in a friendship.
I think so
and,
too.
And a partnership, as this is.
A valued partnership. One that will take the world by storm. We'll get there. We have to have our growing pains.
Right. We'll move on. Now we've entered the final quarter of the show. The bell is tolling. And not to dwell too much on the contributions of one Mr. Brian Wilson, but for those unaware, he is currently a writer for the website whatculture.com. And there was an article that that he posted quite recently that is entitled 10 Bold Film Predictions for 2016. And there were a couple of points in this that David and I had read and thought were worth discussing on the show. So I would like to have a chance to do that here, but I have to preface this by including a little introduction that Brian himself has written specifically for this occurrence, and he was quite adamant that we put this before the discussion of his article. So here it comes from the horse's pen. Wilson disclaimer. As writing is now my full-time job, we'll see how long that dream lasts, I'd like to clarify by saying that not everything I write I 100% agree with. A lot I do, but you know how it is. I like to consider myself more of a professional speculator, or perhaps a professional provocateur. I let you guys be the judge. Brian. So there we go, that was the introduction. Again, eloquently constructed by the professional. So that's out there. Everyone's aware. But the two points that we specifically wanted to talk about, the first one was that Disney's Moana, which is the next animated film that they're due to release, that it will fail to live up to Tangled and Frozen. And the various reasons he gives are that it's not from a story... it's not based on a folk tale, and that there are some changes within the crew and scripters and people who write the music. What were your opinions on that bold claim, if you could, David? That it won't live up to those two other features that we know and love.
You know, I don't want to agree with it. And I have to admit, I hadn't really thought about it, but no. When I say that, I don't mean that I'm picking a fight.
You have a wonderful way to turn a phrase. A constant joy.
I want Moana to do well, but I sort of think that the comment that Brian makes about this one not being a traditionalist approach, I think that's pretty much spot on. I think there's going to be a worrying trend of kids relate too much to. Related so well to the setting and the characters in Tangled and Frozen, because that's just what their fairy tale culture is built on. And I wonder if Moana is just a little too radical, a bit too out there. But yeah, I don't know really. I mean, it's difficult to pass judgment. I hope it does well. I'm sort of seeing maybe 63% on the tomato meter. That's a specific claim. Yeah, that's where I'm feeling it. I'll call that now, for the sake of the future.
Okay, that is done. That is done.
What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I did really enjoy Tangled and Frozen when they came out, and I still enjoy them.
I love them. I think they're great films. Tangled gets films. A really harsh rep. Like a lot of people really don't like it. I think it's great.
Again, you know, I was midway through and you've cut in and now we're just going back to your... No,
Sorry.
Please. Everyone wants to hear what you have to say about Tangled. Please, keep going.
I was conscious of the fact that I was cutting in, but I was hoping...
And yet you still did it!
I was hoping that this might provide you with a bit of... with something else for you to comment on, though. But that was intended to be the... That wasn't intended to be the start of a rant. That was intended to just be...
Apologies, that's my house phone.
That was intended to just be a little comment on Tangled to give a little bit more flavour to what was coming from your dulcet.
Okay. Tones. Okay. Well,
like,
yeah.
Like, I thought you might have, I thought you might well agree with that, and I thought you might.
I do.
Yeah.
I do agree, but yeah, I did enjoy those two films quite a lot when they came out. And I also have a lot of love for Wreck-It Ralph. I'm wondering if I'm missing anything out here. The only other sort of animated film that they've released that I can think of since Tangled is Big Hero 6, which I was less invested in. Didn't think it was quite as good as Wreck-It Ralph at all. So I'm kind of acutely aware that Tangled and Frozen haven't been quite the kind of announcement or prelude to a second Disney renaissance that some people were claiming they were at the time, because we have seen some films that have come out of that are decidedly un-renaissance material. And of course, when I speak about the Disney renaissance, I'm talking about the period from the late 80s to the late 90s that included, you know, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, Hercules, you know, all those classics. And Tangled and Frozen at the time did really feel like a return to form as far as that's concerned. And I would certainly hope and pray that Moana could return to that. It's a style of film that I think we could do with a lot more of in the world. You know, they're classics for a reason. But I don't know. I'm a bit cautious about it. You know, I do think this could be something less than spectacular.
Yeah.
Hopefully not, though. Hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah, see, I'm looking at the picture in Brian's article, and I'm just projecting here, but it sort of looks like the fear and uncertainty.
It looks like us, doesn't it?
Oh, Kyle.
Sorry.
I think the fear and uncertainty in the creators' hearts is starting to come through in the characters' eyes. Obviously, I'm just rolling with a bullshit idea there. But I don't know. I think I see doubt there. Particularly because Brian makes a comment towards the end that it was just one of a bunch of pitches, and that they originally wanted to adapt Terry Pratchett's Mort, which I had no idea. That's pretty interesting, because I couldn't imagine a more sort of weirdly different story for them to attempt.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I remember there were plans in place, or, you know, at least a pitch to adapt that story for film. Years and years ago, you know, possibly the 80s, you know, and it was pitched. But I forget who it was. It was possibly Universal. And they thought that the whole death angle was a bit too morbid and wanted that aspect of it to be taken out. And I sort of don't understand that at all.
That's kind of the point of the whole story, isn't it?
And it's also, you know, the structure in which the story is framed around. I don't know what other concept you could replace death with in there. I don't think you could.
Yeah, I think whichever executive made that decision was really off base on that one.
I hope someone got sacked for that.
I hope so. I hope someone was shot for that. Taken around the back of Universal and splattered across the wall. No less fate than
put
those,
down in the prime of life.
Yeah.
No.
I hope it's
moving
good.
Swiftly on.
Sorry. Oh. Yeah. Carry on. Go. I think we've said all we need to say. I mean, it has made me think, though, at some point I wouldn't mind having like a little like a full-length Disney chat as a podcast. I feel there's a lot of material there and a lot of sort of nostalgic gushing we could do. It might have to be a special.
Let's talk after.
But yeah, we'll talk about this after.
That might happen.
When they're all gone.
Consider that a teaser. Ooh. Consider yourselves titillated.
Ooh, I'm into that. And you're finally beginning to do some work for this.
I'm very conscious of the fact that I've been seen as very slack. And I think it's time I did something about that.
Your contributions amount to sweet FA. But you're the talent. You're the talent. We've established that.
I hate the way this dynamic is starting to become.
You're the brains and I'm just the pack mule.
Next episode, I will host and organize the entire thing from start to finish. If that would be
okay.
An interesting approach.
That's on record here.
That's on record. That is my pledge.
I look forward to that. I look forward to that. That'll be great. And I really hope you just pander to my ego there, because we do know it is the one thing that could tear this all down around us.
You know, it's not the first time people have commented on tearing it down. The Colding crew, yeah. Friends of mine from days of yore, said a similar thing, but it was all they if you recall, they complimented you profusely and were very, very clear that my rambling on would be what tears it down and destroys it. And I think they used the phrase "burn it down" as well.
Maybe not to try to incite anything that I may regret quite soon, but you know, possibly it would be a better idea for us to just split. You know, go our separate ways completely, and each of us just record our own individual podcast, and you know, yours could be distributed to the friends that I have here who I've shared the podcast with, and the one that I record could be shared with the Colding crew, and I think each of us would be much happier for that.
I hope you're wrong. I really do.
We may never know. Right. Time is marching on, and we have one more point to talk about from Brian's charming article.
Good stuff.
And I'm gonna time you on this one because we still have a heap more stuff to cover. But the last point that he makes on his list of bold film predictions for 2016 is that Jesse Eisenberg's performance as Lex Luthor will be critically acclaimed. And this has been a rather contentious topic, you know, not just with us, but in the world at large. What are your opinions on what we've seen in the trailers at the minute, and you know, his portrayal in general? Was it a good casting choice?
Well, I think it was probably a very bad casting choice, because I think, by and large, everyone will reject, the fans will reject it, I think. I haven't seen enough to make me think that it will win the fans over. I think it might very well be the performance that is most critically acclaimed. My instinct is that it won't achieve critical acclaim in inverted commas, but I think it will be fondly sort of received by that group of people. That being said, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really on board with what he's doing with it. I really like the sort of spin he's doing on the Lex Luthor character. And it's one of the things I'm most looking forward to. But I think en masse, I think he'll be rejected. And I think some of the critics will like him. I don't think they'll laud him, though.
Mm. Now, interesting that you say that you really approve of his spin on the character, because I've been, you know, it's recorded, it's out there, you know, it's out there on my Twitter feed that whenever the most recent trailer came out and we saw some more footage of him up there, I was instantly reminded of Sam Rockwell's performance as Justin Hammer in Iron Man 2. And, you know, as great an actor as Sam Rockwell is, he's done some fantastic stuff. You know, that is definitely one of the most forgettable of the bad guys in the Marvel canon. And there are a lot of pretty poor villains out there. And that was sort of one of the more forgettable ones. But I was instantly...
He's no Yellow Jacket.
That's in the vault. But I was instantly reminded of that character when we saw Jesse Eisenberg in this most recent trailer, and I couldn't get past that, and I don't think I ever will. And I think that could really, that, because when he was announced, you know, there was a lot of hate speech, I suppose we could call it, out there, and yeah. I said, no, I think he could be our man. He's proven himself in the past. You know, he's given captivating performances in films like The Social Network. He could do it. He could do it. And yet the trailers just hasn't shown any of that. That whole "the red coats are coming" thing, it just makes my skin crawl, and not in the way they want it to. It's just
Jesse can do like
so
that.
Much better than that. I know you do, but you like Yellow Jacket, so.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. No, I liked it. I thought it was good. I know everyone else hated that as well, actually, but I quite liked it. It's interesting that you bring up the Sam Rockwell comparison, because I definitely see where you're coming from with that. But the one that was sort of the comparison that was brought to my attention was whether or not he might maybe be basing this on his screenwriter friend Max Landis, who people might know from how he was from. He's a guy who sort of has some occasionally controversial opinions. I actually really like him, but he was destroyed a couple of weeks ago over his views on The Force Awakens. And so I've been reading some articles suggesting that he might be doing this this thing of, well, because technically Eisenberg is playing Lex Luthor Jr., not Lex Luthor himself.
So
they were thinking, well, maybe the spin on it is that he's this sort of this brilliant young son,
young upstart.
Yeah, a young upstart, this kind of enthusiastic, energetic sort of mentality. Maybe a bit. Because Max Landis, as people may know, is the son of acclaimed director John Landis, and a lot of the criticisms that get leveled about Max Landis unfairly, I think, are about nepotism, about him trying to live up to his father, which I don't think he's trying to do. But anyway, so it, all of that was kind of interesting. That was sort of what made me think about it. But I do agree with you about the Sam Rockwell stuff. It's very reminiscent of that sort of flouncing, talky kind of villain with his I can see that. Even though I totally see where people are coming from when they hate it, I really loved it. It hit me somehow. I'm on board. I'm sold.
Okay, I'm glad. Well, I think we've kind of talked enough about that, and we do need to hurry things along now, because for those who just have the audio feed, you know, which is everyone except us two, of course, my mum just entered my room there to tell me that my tea is ready, and that my podcasting will have to be cut short. We do have time.
I thought I was just being really boring when you were signaling for me to slow down. I was like,
no.
I was being that slow.
It's just taken the wind completely out of me here, that this great thing I'm a part of has to be rushed along by my parents' schedule, because I live at home and I'm unemployed. Yay. But we do have one more topic to talk about now. We're going to enter our listener correspondence here, and I think this is a segment that we will refer to from henceforth as Criticisms and Witticisms.
Ooh, I like that.
And we had some correspondence from the composer and performer of our musical intro, my cousin Glenn. And he had a couple of questions to ask you specifically, David, and we're just going to go with one of them. And he did put on as an addendum that you have to strictly answer it in a minute. Now, I don't mind if we go a bit over that. But okay. I think you will enjoy this question, because it does relate slightly to one of our anecdotes, you know, one of our truly great historical adventures. And the question is, David, do you watch or have you ever watched Dragon Ball Z? Glenn is a huge fan of Dragon Ball Z. You know, he has two tattoos that I'm aware of characters in that anime, and he's interested to know whether you watch or have ever watched it, if you're a fan.
I won't need a minute to answer this one. I'm sorry, Glenn, but the answer is no. I've not, like, other than it occasionally being on at a friend's house over the years of my childhood. No, I've not seen it. And the little bits that have been exposed to me, I'm not a fan. It just doesn't do it for me. I get that people are. I get that it's a major thing in anime, but it's just not my thing. There is one major exception to that I have seen, and that was when running from something that I thought would be much, much worse, I decided to accompany Kyle to the cinema a couple of months ago. I didn't care what we saw, as long as I could get away from whatever it is I was running from. And he wanted to go see Dragon Ball Z, and I said, fine, we'll go see it.
Dragon Ball Z Resurrection F.
Yeah,
what? The limited edition release of the latest film.
We had a lovely Nando's, and then we went into this film, and...
Nando's? Is that a spin-off from Cheeky Nando's?
Yes, it's a more romantic...
Lovely Nando's. I love it.
And I was open-minded at first, but everyone in the audience was a bit fancy. And so
a bit keen.
Okay. Kyle in particular was so sort of effulgent with joy about what was coming that really soured my milk. And then the film started, and I was sort of like, I tried to give it its just run, and I'm sorry, it just didn't do it for me, and I'm sad to say that I not only fell asleep, but that as I was falling asleep, I was delighted by that turn of events, and I did everything I could to hurry it along, and I slept for two-thirds of the film, perhaps.
You missed all the good bits.
I really enjoyed it. It was one of my finer naps of the year. I'm sorry, Glenn. That's such a damning criticism. I get that people are fans. That's great. It's just not my thing.
Very good. Right, I think that wraps that up pretty completely there. And if you would like to have any correspondence read out in a future installment of Criticisms and Witticisms, then direct your correspondences to either our Twitter feed at twofops or our email address, twofops1@gmail.com. Those addresses will be posted in the podcast description below. Thank you.
Kyle, you give me shivers with that voice.
That was good, wasn't it? I'm proud of that.
It really was. That really was.
And on that area, I think it's time to tuck this little bad boy up and put him to bed. And I'm not just talking about you, David. I'm talking about the podcast.
Oh, too much, man. Too done. Much. Great.
Too much. Right, let's call it there. And we'll see you guys same time next week.
Fare you well.
Bye.